So, PC, these issues are not your fault.
Not my fault.
Of course not, pal.
Unlike Mac, whose operating system and hardware are all made by the same people, your stuff comes from a bunch of different places.
You can't be blamed for that. How could you?
Under those circumstances, who could expect everything to work together the way they should?
No. So it's not my fault.
Exactly.
It's not my fault.
Okay, go with that.
It's not my fault. It's Mac's fault.
Okay.
It's Mac's fault. What a breakthrough.
Hello, and welcome to the Coldcast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me today, he's a dangerous man. On the pub fight scene, he's known as the boxer of bollocks, the terror of taints. Leander Caney is here.
Hello, Erfan.
Also with us, he's so sexy, so furry. When the Thai locals see him go by in his short jean shorts, they say, "There goes the bear of Bangkok." Buster Khaini is here.
Oh, hey. What's up?
Man, are you just tearing up that island? What is going on over there?
Oh, I'm just chilling, really.
Have you even seen the island during daylight yet? Are you just out at night when all the people are collecting trash and sweeping up the streets?
Yeah, basically.
What's the funnest thing that you've done so far, Buster?
Dude, one time I went to a snake show. That was pretty crazy.
Do I even want to know what that is?
It's where a guy takes a snake and he takes off his pants. No, it's where they it's like they
he pulls an entire snake from his rectal cavity.
Yeah, they kiss him and they dance with him, or the ending, the grand finale is they take a big 12-foot python out of a bag, toss it in a big nasty looking pool of water, and then the dude dives in and goes in and tries to grab it and pulls it out. It comes up with this big python.
That doesn't even sound dangerous.
Well, the guy can't see, but the python can. Oh, so he comes up with it all wrapped around him and stuff.
Wait, pythons are those dangerous? I thought those were boa constrictors.
Yeah, they're boa constrictors, yeah, only huge. Like an anaconda.
Yeah, but they're so slow and lazy, aren't they? What's a python?
Dude, its teeth are so big.
They have teeth?
I think so.
But they're not poisonous.
Not poisonous, but the cobras they had were poisonous. Those, and I petted, touched
okay,
one.
Okay, now that's a show. Whoa, I'd be more impressed if he dived into the pool with a cobra. And he came out, and it was just attached to his chest.
F that noise.
Well, and it's blowing up like a giant balloon because there's so much blood coming out.
As the show goes horribly wrong, and the guy just totally passes out there. He's just being pumped full of poison. I don't know. If you get bit by it, we're going so off track already. If you get bit what are the poisonous snakes?
Cobra. I think mostly cobras and vipers.
If you get bit by a cobra,
whatever.
Do you die, or do you just
I mean, they're pretty.
I think you might
nasty.
Die.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm getting more and more impressed with this snake show. So, for those that don't know, Buster is living in Thailand right now. Where are you again, Buster?
Chiang Mai.
Chiang Mai, but the funny part is his internet is 50 times better than his connection was in Phoenix, Arizona, which constantly disconnected. So he's across the ocean with excellent internet. Okay, we've diverted enough. Let's get down to business, shall we? So, on the cusp of hitting the record button, we've got some exciting stuff to talk about here. Apple has sent out their iPhone Pro media event invitation. So in true form, true to tradition, we'll be deciphering the event invites and offering you our hardware predictions for the September media event. Also, a new report shines light on how the new iPhone UI will work without a home button, in case you've been living under a stone the last several months or listening to a podcast, which isn't as good as this one. You may not know that the next iPhone is not supposed to have a home button. If you listen to this show, you would know because we talk about it literally every single show for the last 4 months. And we'll also tell you the interesting history of the Apple logo. This is something that you may not have heard before. In fact, I can almost guarantee you haven't heard the story of how that iconic bite that is taken out of the Apple came to fruition. There's lots of legends out there on how this happened, but we're going to tell you the real story on how this came to be. And if you stick around to the end, we're going to be doing either an all-new Under Review or an all-new What We're Into, and I just realized that we forgot to make a decision on what we're doing.
Let's just make it when we get to it, okay?
Okay, let's do What We're Into, because I got a pretty juicy pick this week. Busta, you got some?
Oh, I got something really wet.
Okay, so we're doing an all new under review. Buster's going to talk about his new pet cobra that he got from this show that just killed a man. Let's see. Before we dive in, let me go ahead and give a very big thank you to Blue Apron for supporting this episode. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country of the U.S. of A. For less than $10 a meal, they deliver seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients right to your door. Blue Apron is completely flexible, so you can customize your recipes each week and you choose a delivery option that fits your needs. And Blue Apron's freshest guarantee promises that every ingredient arrives ready to cook or they'll make it right. I've been using Blue Apron for months and months. It's a really wonderful service. I like that you get delicious food served to you every week without having to think about it. And the best part is that it teaches you how to cook. I've learned all sorts of new recipes that I never would have dabbled in because they include ingredients that I'm just not familiar with. And with Blue Apron, they're constantly introducing you to new genres of food and showing you exactly how to cook those foods, which I think is my favorite part. Some of their upcoming menu items include Master Chef, almost looks like Master Chief, Master Chef roasted chicken with mashed purple potatoes and green beans, Barramundi and tzatziki sauce with summer vegetables, and Frika salad. I think you're really going to Frika out over that. Anybody? Okay. Nobody. Okay, I'll move on. Soy glazed pork and rice cakes with bok choy and marinated green beans, summer vegetable focaccia pizzas with marinated tomatoes. And for our listeners, you can get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/cultcast. That's blueapron.com/cultcast. There is absolutely no reason not to try it. You get your first three meals free, three free meals with free shipping. There's no reason not to do that at blueapron.com/cultcast. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Okay, the big story. After months of anticipation and a flurry of rumors, which we've been talking about endlessly, Apple finally sent out media invites to its big iPhone 8/iPhone Pro event today. The event will take place September 12th and will take place at the brand new Steve Jobs Theater at Apple Park. Oh, you know, I have a feeling I'm going to get kind of emotional for this event.
Why?
It's going to be the 10-year anniversary of the iPhone. It's going to be a commemorative event. And they're having it in this brand new theater named after their prolific co-founder who died. It's a big deal. Leander, you're with me. I know you're with me, Leander.
Yeah, it'll be an emotionally charged moment for sure. Yeah, they're going to come out. Tim will come out and, you know, pay tribute to Steve. And a lot of people will be thinking about it. They'll be checking out the theater.
God, you sappy dolts.
There's going to be some misty eyes.
Well, that's a good point, because Jobs definitely wasn't sentimental about that kind of thing, was he? So he wouldn't have been impressed.
No, if Tim Cook died, he would have just moved on. We never would have talked about him again. And the new theater would still be called Steve Jobs Theater. But
that's right.
But Tim Cook, he seems like he's more sentimental. He's a lot more sentimental than Steve Jobs.
He's just more. Yeah, everyone is sentimental, really, right? Jobs is the only one who wasn't sentimental. I mean, everyone there wanted to celebrate it, and Cook is just more in touch with other people's feelings.
Yeah, and his own is for sure. Do you think that they'll do anything to commemorate Steve Jobs? Like they'll talk about him and do like a segment for him, or do you think they'll just mention it and just kind of move on?
I'm sure they'll talk about the campus. You know, I bet there'll be a quick recap, and they'll talk about the theater, and it'll be short, though, I expect. I don't think they'll dwell on it.
And of course, the other cool thing is just that this is taking place in a brand new theater on Apple's campus. This is where they're going to have, I would presume, most, if not all, of their future press events to announce new products. And we don't really know exactly what it looks like in there yet. There haven't really been a lot of leaks showing.
Well, it's underground, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Just the lobby up at the top.
The whole thing is totally subterranean. All you see is that big glass. It looks like a spaceship to me at the top. So very beautiful piece of architecture. We get to see it for the first time, and man, that has got to be nerve-wracking because they have all that new equipment in there, too, that they got to make sure it's working so they can broadcast thing worldwide.
Yeah,
For sure they're going to be in there practicing right now, right?
They're probably already in there. They've probably been in there for a week or maybe even more practicing. I mean, think of all the recording equipment and broadcasting equipment that has to be put into place and then tested to make sure it's all working flawlessly, right?
I expect that. I would have thought it would have been logistically easier because, you know, when they used to go to other events, you know, like the Yerba Buena Gardens here in San Francisco, I mean, they were there like a week before. Mm-hmm. They had guards around the venue 24/7 at each and every door. They had to truck in all this equipment. Like you said, they had to get all this broadcasting equipment. You know, there were these huge, they had to shut down a lane of one of the roads, 3rd Street, you know, which would be caused major disruption in the downtown traffic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would have thought, like, if they've got this thing, you know, built, it's going to be a lot easier because it'll just be all permanent, right? It'll all be there, permanently installed and ready to go.
But for the first go at it, like, it looks like still finishing it from the last drone video, so I'm surprised. It's like, they're going to be 24/7 trying to finish the outside too.
Undoubtedly, yeah.
Yeah, and all the media is going to have to trek across a big muddy field to get to it, right?
Well, they got the road finished, don't they? I mean, people can walk up the road and go inside.
It's unclear how much they've got finished, although I didn't watch that last video. Did you watch it, Buster?
I did a post on it. And the theater's not inside the ring, right? It's outside of it on the property?
Yeah, it's on a weird little hill.
Huh.
Well, hopefully they make those journalists take their shoes off or something. It's not trampling.
Oh, that's what Steve would want. He wouldn't want you to ruin the Zen, you know?
I hope so. Those freaking jerks. Don't put mud all over the brand new digs there. Okay, so as far as what we're expecting, it's going to be focused on the iPhone 8, iPhone Pro, of course, but we're also expecting a 7S, 7S Plus, which should be largely the same as the current 7s. In fact, I'd be surprised if there were any visible differences at all. What, Leander?
Well, they got wireless charging, right? And also, don't they have vertical cameras too?
Oh, they switching to vertical cameras on the iPhone 7? I thought they were going to stay the same, horizontal.
I'm going to bet they switch. I don't know. That's a good question.
I think they're going to stay horizontal
too, just because it's going to be way easier for manufacturing.
But there was a rumor that they were going to get wireless charging. So that might be included. And then, of course, the all-new 4K Apple TV, which if they release, I'm going to buy, even though I don't even have a 4K TV. And although I'm hoping to have one before...
Future-proofing, right?
Yeah, future-proofing, exactly. I'm hoping to have a 4K TV before the end of the year. We'll see what prices do, though. And then also the Apple Watch Series 3 with LTE, which will probably look exactly the same from all the rumors. It seems like the only thing that's going to be changing is the internals. I would love to see a new design, but I don't think that's in the cards, at least not yet. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about the invitation. Oh,
yeah,
what?
Right.
What,
I was just going to say, yeah, we got to break down the invitation because, I mean, it's chock full of clues, isn't it?
Isn't it? Okay, well, I definitely have some theories on what this could mean, but why don't you tell us? Why don't we describe it first? For people that haven't seen it, we'll link to it in the show notes. You can have a look at it. The top left corner has a blue hue to it, and then it looks like there's a spotlight shining from left to right, and the spotlight area looks like it's kind of whitish, and then towards the bottom you get kind of like a reddish orange pinkish hue, and it kind of looks like spotlights are shining the red and the white. Would you agree with that, Leander?
No.
Okay.
Well,
what do you see? This is like a Rorschach test here. He's going to tell us about his mother.
Right, exactly, yeah. Well, you know, I don't think you described, you know, you didn't say that it's the Apple logo. It's the Apple logo with a bite out of it, and it's got underneath it, "Let's meet at our place," which is clear enough. It says underneath, "Please join us for the first ever event at the Steve Jobs Theater in Cupertino." So, you know, pretty obvious what that means. But the Apple logo is divided into like three different colors, isn't it? Like you said, there's a red section at the bottom, a blue section at the top left, and then a white section that covers up the sort of top right. And to me, it looks like two out-of-focus iPhones. One's red and one's white.
Yeah.
Okay.
With a blue background.
Or it kind of looks, there's a little bit of copper like in the bottom right corner of the white one. So,
yeah.
And that's been the rumored color. I don't know. So.
What do it is a bit abstract though.
Yeah,
Buster, your thoughts.
I have nothing, and this invite is the first one in a while that I can remember where it's just like, oh, it's just like an abstract Apple logo.
It's like abstract art.
You know, because, yeah, other ones, like, people have gotten ridiculously like, what does it mean? What are the clues? But I just really don't see any in this one.
Well, it's also red, white, and blue, so is there some kind of, like, you know, is it patriotic?
Some people were saying that maybe Tim Cook was going to announce like some political campaign. Yeah, exactly.
And this is his like campaign logo. Yeah, exactly. Cook for 2008.
There you go. I was thinking maybe, I know you don't see like the spotlight aspect of this logo, but to me it looks like someone on stage, there's a spotlight on them, and I was thinking in celebration of the 10-year anniversary of the iPhone, Tim Cook might be coming out on the stage under the spotlight and do like a tap dance number in honor of Steve Jobs and the new iPhone.
Yeah. Not what I occurred to me, but...
And he ends... Well, hold on. I didn't finish. And he ends the number with his hands on his knees, and he crosses his knees and his hands cross over, and he does that like a series of times before yeah. he ends with jazz hands.
Right. I don't know. You never know. It's a new theater.
Okay. No takers on that. Well, that would make for an amazing show. I'll tell you that much right now.
Doesn't it remind you? You know, I thought it looked really old-fashioned. Like, it didn't look modern. Like some of the, you know, the invites recently have at least looked modern.
Yeah.
But this looked really retro.
I see what you mean. I see what you mean there. It is an odd pairing of all these various colors, and the shapes of the colors don't really make sense to me either. They do look like abstract art, don't they?
Yeah.
So I think the conclusion is we have no idea what this could mean.
Yeah.
Not even a clue. I think maybe the best option so far would be that these are iPhones. Maybe these are going to be the colors of the iPhones that we see or something like that. But, well, we don't have long to wait. We have a mere 12 days before the truth is revealed. And actually, when I'm watching the keynote now, I'm going to be very curious to see if even after the keynote, we can figure out what the heck this means, because we may not even be able to tell even after they have revealed all the products that they're going to announce. Okay, well, moving on from that, let's talk about this big story this week, arguably the biggest story this week. Was this story out of Bloomberg that talks about what the iPhone 8 UI will look like without a home button. If you think about it, the home button has been around for a long time, and Apple is going to have to, through their new software, train you how to use the new software. It's going to have to be intuitive, and it's going to have to make sense to you. And our old pal, Mark Gurminator Gurman, came out with some graphs and some descriptions on what the new UI will look like. And let me pick out some choice pieces from his mega long piece here. Let's see. Across the bottom of the screen, there's going to be a thin software bar in lieu of the home button. You're going to have to go look at the picture of this, because when I read this for the first time, I couldn't visualize it.
Yeah.
Could you, Leander?
Well, no, and I have a lot of questions about it, to be honest. But why don't you read the description and see what he says, right?
A user can drag that thin software bar. It's like a thin line just sitting at the bottom of your screen where the home button is going. Well, was previously, yeah. A user can drag that little line up the middle of the screen to open the phone. So that's going to unlock it. When you're inside an app, that same gesture will start multitasking. From there, you can continue to flick upwards to close the app and go back to the home screen. So it looks like you're going to be interacting with this little line that just kind of sits at the bottom of your screen instead of the home button itself. And he goes on to say the new models, this is the iPhone 8, the new model's overall size will be similar to that of the iPhone 7, but will include an OLED screen, which we've talked about many times, that is slightly larger than the one on the 7 Plus, which is crazy because I'm looking at my 7 Plus right now. This is a big phone. And the idea that they're going to fit this screen inside the body of a phone that's similar to an iPhone 7 is kind of hard for me to wrap my mind around. I guess when they take the bevel off the top and the bottom, you already have a significantly smaller phone. But still, it looks like it's bigger than an iPhone 7. So I'm going to have to see that to really get a good idea of what it's going to look like. He also goes on to say the new screen is rounded on the corners, While the current iPhone screens have square corners, the power button on the right side of the phone is longer, so it is easier to press while holding the device in one hand. I really like that a lot because I use my power button all the time. The phone will have 6 vertical rows of apps showing 24 icons on each page, excluding the dock, a gray bar at the bottom that houses commonly used apps. The dock is redesigned with a new interface similar to the one on the iPad version of iOS 11, and Apple plans to include a stainless steel band around the outside of the phone that the glass will then curve into. So a similar form factor to the iPhone 5, which I thought was arguably one of Apple's most beautiful phones. Okay, Leander, your thoughts?
Yeah, well...
Or questions?
Well, you know, there's a lot to unpack there, right? But, you know... let's talk about the UI stuff that he described, right? The little bar. Well, I don't know. I find that hard to imagine that they're going to go back to that will be replaced the home button. Mm-hmm. And especially the swiping up part, you know, if you're in an app and you're done with it, and you want to go back to the home screen. You know, does it sit there permanently, like floating across the UI of all these apps?
That's a good question, yeah.
Or is it invoked when you put your finger near it? You know, do you have to press on the screen? Is it like a 3D touch thing?
Hmm.
You know, maybe you have to press and hold.
Oh man,
to invoke it or something like that. I mean, I can't imagine it floating there because it's going to ruin. You know, like what are you doing when you're watching a video for a start or playing a game? You know, is it going to be? I can't imagine that it's going to be permanent. And why a bar? Why not a button? Why not a virtual home button? And then also, like, you know, like swiping up to go back to the home screen, that's going to cause a whole bunch of problems.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're, because, you know, it's the fundamental gesture, isn't it, that you're going to be using to interact with the phone. You know, like if you're scrolling up and down a web page or scrolling up down through a list, you know, iMessage or whatever. And you know, if you're scrolling up, that could easily invoke, you know, going back to the home screen.
Yeah.
So I find it I'm a little skeptical that they would use such a gesture, you know, for such a fundamental action.
Well, plus not to mention if you start the gesture from too low on your screen, you're gonna activate control panel.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You'll get that multitasking thing, right?
Yeah.
Huh.
Buster.
Yeah, and that's I'm curious to see it too, and I feel like everybody's gonna have to basically relearn how to use their iPhones, which is fine for like people like us, but I'm thinking about my parents and other plebons and stuff, and I think it'll be a big change for a lot of people.
I mean, clearly we are superior technologically,
yeah,
and so we will figure it out quite quickly, but you make a good point as far as other people, other normies, as I like to call them, may have issues with this, and that's a good point. I mean, my mom had a lot of trouble learning how to use her iPad, and she finally figured out how to use the whole thing. And anytime they change anything, I always hear about it.
Well, there's always a huge outcry.
Of course, my mom is also not going to be updating to the newest iPhone, so I guess that doesn't matter.
But at some point,
I would imagine most people are just going to stick with the lower end iPhones. What?
But at some point, they will though. Like, you know, maybe not this year, but in two years down the line, and that's what the new UI will be, and they'll be like, "Oh my gosh, what do I do?"
There's this new on-off button, right? It's supposed to be longer and easier to use with one hand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for one, you know, like I don't think you're going to need it. You're not going to need a button to turn the phone on, right? Because it'll automatically turn on whenever you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that right? It'll be strange because it'll be like an almost it'll appear like it has an always on screen. Because whenever your beautiful face is anywhere near it, it detects it and it turns the screen on.
Thank you for the compliment.
Right.
And also they're adding Tap to Wake, which is a feature I've wanted on the iPhone ever since I got my Apple Watch. So you can just tap the screen and it turns it on. So you may have to press the power button less often. Because right now, to turn the power button or to turn the screen on, I usually press the power button because if you touch the Touch ID button in just slightly, it automatically goes to the home screen, right? So I always avoid pressing the home button now because it works too well. So yeah, there's a lot of things here that we're clearly going to have to see how they work. And Mark Gurman, I would be surprised actually seeing the detail in his piece, and we'll link to it. You can read it. I would be surprised if he got a lot of stuff wrong because he outlines a lot of details, and these details are things that I would be surprised if they changed last minute. These seem like things that Apple probably had to spend a lot of time whittling and honing, and making sure that the software itself taught you how to use it as you use it. What's that, Leander?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the other thing as well is, I mean, we're all using the iOS 11 beta, so there's you know, he's describing what appears to be you know, another beta, for, especially for the iPhone 8, iPhone Pro, that hasn't been released yet. Presumably, we'll, you know, they'll work on it or they'll release it when the thing actually ships.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. The beta for the iPhone 8 clearly must be different.
Right. It's got to be. It's, it sounds like it's a different UI. I mean, a different, you know, yeah, a different operating system, which is also kind of, I don't know, you know, and if they, so if there's a bunch of UI stuff that hasn't been released and tested, I don't know. I'm just really skeptical.
Well, you are a skeptical person.
Yeah, it doesn't really sort of add up. And then wouldn't they have a similar, you know, the, actually, no, what am I saying? Anyway, the hardware details look good. I saw some mock-ups, you know, of what it might look like with that kind of sort of iPhone 4 style silver steel bezel.
Yeah.
So it's has a squarer design. It's not as rounded as the current designs.
We'll see. I've seen some mock-ups that look really sharp, and I've seen some mock-ups that look terrible. And I'm a little nervous just to see what they end up releasing, because some of the mock-ups I've seen have really not been very attractive, in my opinion. And of course, those are just mock-ups. Who knows what Apple's actually going to do? But we have seen some what seem to be fairly accurate mock-ups. So I'm still a little bit nervous. But we only have 12 days. That's going to be the theme of this show. We only have 12 days, and we'll know exactly what we're getting. But let's move on and talk about the inductive charging buster.
Oh,
this has been a big rumor, and it looks like the inductive charging may not be as quick as we'd like it to be. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, so it's supposed to be faster or have like more draw than you get from your like regular iPhone charger, which is 5 watts, mm-hmm. I believe. But a lot of the inductive chargers right now, they support up to like, I think it's 14 watts or 15 watts to make it charge faster. But Apple is only going to use 7.5 watts on its inductive charger. So it'll probably be slower than like a lot of other smartphone inductive charging pads that people are used to.
I actually haven't used a inductive charging pad for a phone. I've used them for other devices, like my toothbrush has inductive charging.
I have a Mophie case that does one.
Does it work pretty fast?
Not really. Yeah, it's already pretty slow. Okay. So that's the one thing I am worried about is like, because I think you want a higher draw on the inductive charger because I think, and I'm not an electrical engineer, but I believe it's not like as strong as like a direct connection. So that's why you want it stronger.
You're not an electrical engineer.
Yeah, no.
All this time, I've been running these questions by you, and I thought you had sound understanding of the technology behind them.
Sorry.
And now I just feel like a dunce. Yeah, my Sonicare toothbrush, they've had inductive charging forever because they need to be waterproof. And so you put this charge, or you put the toothbrush on the base, and I think it takes a full 24 hours to charge. If the thing is dead, it takes forever. And admittedly, I don't have a lot of experience, and I am also not an electronics engineer. I want to caveat my following statement with that. But in my limited experience with inductive charging, it takes an eon to charge your device. So I'm hoping that Apple has figured out a way to make this work reasonably fast. It doesn't need to be as fast as lightning, but my gosh, it can't take 8 hours to charge.
No, it's going to be reasonably fast. I can't imagine they would put it in because I don't think there's a big demand for it, is there? And it's not like it's a feature that people are clamoring for, even though it's been available.
I'm clamoring for it. I'm really excited for
it. And I think, and if it didn't charge it as fast or faster than regular charging, I think it's, you know, it's going to be a big step backwards, right? And I can't imagine, you know, them doing it for the sake of it. You know, it seems, you know, I think it would have to be better to be included.
Well, it's going to be an optional feature.
Right.
And a lot of the rumors have indicated that if you want to buy the wireless charging mat, so the phone will have wireless charging built in, but if you want to actually do wireless charging, you're going to have to buy an extra accessory from Apple.
That just seems...
And I'm sure it's going to cost you... It's probably going to be $50 for the charger, yeah. Would be my guess. Maybe even more.
And that's... I feel like that's crazy, you know? Like, it should come with the pad. I don't know. I'm suspect on that rumor.
Well, I hope that you're right, because it is going to be a big feature. And if they say all you have to do is buy this extra accessory, there's going to be a collective sigh.
Yeah, everybody's going to be like, oh, I'm not going to do that.
Probably some very loud flatulence in the audience as everyone's deflated, because I don't want to spend an extra $50 just for a charger. I hate paying money for chargers. they're so expensive too. They always mark them up like 800%. And so you buy a device and they're like, "Do you want the extra AC adapter? It's only going to be $79.95." And you're like, $79.95 for a charger? Are you nuts?
Well, this is the kind
like this thing should be like $8.
This is the kind of thing that it's kind of accessory where you would buy, you know, two or three extra ones, right? So there would one be in the box and you'd use it at home. But then you'd probably want one for the office, right?
Yeah.
Or some,
definitely. You would want to have them everywhere.
Yeah. So, you know, I would say that's the kind of thing that they would. This is why there's extras. You know, you can buy extra ones at an extra charge.
Okay. I like your idea much better. So they're going to give you one for free. But if you want an extra one for all your other locations, then you get to buy them.
Right.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that.
I would have thought that would be more likely.
Well, you got to think also for a whatever the phone's going to cost, we know it's going to be expensive, $1,200, $1,300, $1,400 for the premium phone. Then yes, you're paying so much. Hopefully Apple realizes that their customers are already dropping a lot of coin on the phone itself and they need to give you the accessories. They're not going to try and nickel and dime you. And I don't feel like Apple's a company that generally tries to nickel and dime you unless it comes to dongles, in which case that's exactly what they do. And I've come full circle. They're definitely not giving us that charging pad. You cheapskates, go buy it. That's what Tim Cook's going to say on stage. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about the history of the Apple logo. I think there's a fascinating story behind the logo. It's changed over time. Remember, it started as that weird Newton. It almost looked like a lithograph, and then it changed into the Apple shape itself. Well,
yeah, the first one was designed by Ron Wayne. What's his name? Yeah, Ron Wayne.
Yeah, Ronald Wayne.
Yeah.
Ronald McDonald, most people don't know that's his middle name, Ronald McDonald Wayne, who was one of the co-founders of Apple, if you didn't know that. He was the guy who donated like $800 and then decided like, several months later that he didn't want to do it because Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak were just way too energetic and he was like already in his 40s and he's like, yeah, I can't keep up with these guys.
Yep, and he traded in his 10% stake of Apple for $800.
Man.
And he would have been a multi billionaire.
Billionaire. I don't think I'll ever get over that story.
Well, does. He does get over it. He's actually very, very. I think you know what he says about it is really inspirational because, you know, he says that he doesn't regret it. It was the right decision at the time, and he has no regrets at all.
That's crazy. If that were me, I would be crying about it to this day.
I feel like at that point, you kind of have to like tell yourself that though, right? Like, no, I don't regret it. Otherwise, you'll like forever just be like, my God, I could be a billionaire
right now.
Like, I feel like you have to like develop a coping mechanism for it, and maybe that's his. And because that's great and inspirational for helping people get over their dumb mistakes. But I mean,
well, it wasn't dumb at the time. I mean, he was right. He didn't know. He could never have fathomed what Apple would become. I mean, he didn't know Steve Jobs. I mean, at that time, Steve Jobs was a stinky, dirty hippie who rarely showered,
right?
Exactly. And then there's Steve Wozniak, like his Hodor. I don't know. At the time, would I have kept that money in? I might have left too.
Right. Yeah. No, it probably was the best thing, you know, the wisest decision that he was looking at the time. $800 was a lot of money in those days.
Okay, Leander, walk us through the iterations of the logo, right?
Well, anyway, the reason we're talking about it is because inaugurated in, they changed it in August 27th, 1999. This is when they replaced the striped multicolored logo that they've been using since 1977. So 20 years later, 22 years later, in 1999, August 27th, just this last week, they replaced the striped one with a monochrome version. But the first corporate, the striped one was it was designed by Rob Janoff, 29-year-old graphic designer. He was a freelancer, and he was commissioned by Steve Jobs to design the logo to coincide with the debut of the Apple II at the West Coast Computer Fair, which marked Apple's graduation from a small startup into a serious business. This was their first, showing off their first real computer, the Apple II.
And it was the first computer to ever have a color display.
Right, a 16-bit color display. And this is why Jobs, this is one of Jobs' brief to Janoff, was to make sure that it included, somehow an indication that the Apple II had a 16-bit color display, which is the first PC to include a color display. So he wanted that to be included in the logo. That was his first instruction. The other instruction was don't make it cute. He didn't want anything cute. He wanted something like cool.
He failed there. It's so cute.
Well, now, but at the time, I think it definitely was, you know, it had a sort of seriousness of purpose.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was, you know, I think it definitely, like, you know, made it look much more professional than Ron Wayne's Newton one, anyway, for sure.
Yeah, that Newton one was terrible, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, of course. As a logo, yeah, terrible. But it, around the edge, it had the inscription, a mind forever voyaging through strange seas of thought, alone. Yes.
Very lovely poem.
Alone. Terrible. It's actually, I think, quite an evocative logo.
But just as far as logos go, I feel like it's just way too complicated cluttered.
It's a graphic illustration. It's not a logo.
Yeah, it's more like an illustration. Well, yeah. That's exactly what it was. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The rainbow logo, I think, it's one of the most famous corporate logos in the world, isn't it? Obviously, you know, it's right up there with Nike and many others.
Very iconic.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, really a working piece of genius. But of course, you know, like, a lot of that has to do with how much money and exposure Apple puts behind it. You know, I think that has a lot to do with how, you know, how logos become iconic because you see them all the time and in all sorts of places. And of course, that has a lot to do with the marketing clout of the company behind it.
I guess even the McDonald's arches are pretty iconic at this point.
Right,
but they're not considered cool.
No, and, you know, they're not that, you know, is it really that great, the arches? You know, I don't know. You know, it's iconic because it's global, it's everywhere, you see it all the time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally, because when you look at it from a design perspective, it's just a big yellow M that looks like it's made from French fries.
Yeah, yeah, and I'd say the IBM one as well, you know, like, I'd say the FedEx one is a clever logo. There's a bunch of clever ones.
Oh, really? You think the FedEx one is pretty good?
Well, because if you look at it, it has an arrow, you know, like it has a... And Carrefour is a clever one, the French supermarket company. They have hidden... They're clever graphically.
Mm.
You know, the FedEx one has a hidden arrow in it that you don't see.
Yeah, right? I'm looking at it right now, and I don't see what you're talking about.
Hold on.
Let's have a long moment of silence while we
call it up.
Investigate this visual icon.
What am I saying? Yeah. Maybe it was the old FedEx logo. Yeah.
Maybe it was the old one.
Hold on. I'm losing my mind. Yeah. Okay. Scratch all that.
Old FedEx logo.
There it is. Yeah. It's between the E and the X. You see? And once you see it, you can't miss it.
Holy moly. I see it.
Right.
It's like one of those visual 3D illustrations where you have to stare at the dots and then it jumps out. Yes, you're totally right. There it is. I've never seen that before.
Right. And then once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, I have never noticed that before. Well, I don't know if the rainbow Apple logo was as clever as this, but it certainly was illustrative of Apple's new technology and incredibly iconic. I just think the shape of the Apple, everything about it, it's cool, it's memorable, it's fashionable, and I like now how simple it's become, and I think it's hilarious that it took them all these years to go from that wacky Newton logo to the rainbow logo to the glass logo to the metal version of the logo to now just a simple white logo. Now it's just a pure white Apple. It took them all that time to arrive at this very simple branding.
Yeah, yeah, stripped down one. Yeah. Well, I think it would have looked. It wouldn't have looked. At, you know, back in the '70s, it would have looked odd, wouldn't it? It would not have fitted with its time.
Maybe not. And of course, the computers back then were yellow plastic and white plastic and. And when Apple moved to the Bondi Blue iMac, which was their first iMac ever, they realized they couldn't use the rainbow logo because it just looked ridiculous sitting on top of that shiny plastic iMac. So they had to change it, and that's when they moved into the monochromatic era of the logo, which is the one that you see now. They use it in silver.
Well, they had a reflective look in it, didn't it? So it was made to look aqua.
Oh, and I loved that version.
And so it was slightly different. It had a highlight at the top, so
it looked like a piece of candy.
Yeah, yeah, right. And
I always go back to Steve Jobs saying it made you look like you wanted to lick it.
Lick
you know?
It, right? Oh yeah, you totally wanted to lick it. And then it became more sort of silver and reflective.
Which I can't say when they started making it and it looked like metal. I wasn't a fan of that version.
I know, I liked it because it definitely reflected the like the look of the machines. It looked just like the accents, the Apple logo they were putting onto the hardware.
How much would you lose your mind if Apple came out and released like a vintage piece of technology, a new piece of technology with a vintage flair and it had the rainbow logo on it? I'd go nuts. I'd pay extra for that.
Actually, you know what? We should look into that because I think I've seen a few mock-ups of people of you know like how the iPhone would look. Or...
I think I saw that same mock-up. The guy did those mock-ups of the iPhone, and it looked incredible.
Right.
It was like a vintage kind of like yellowish body. Like that yellow plastic of like the Lisa era and like the Apple II, and
then the it had Snow like White the, design language.
Yeah. Oh man, it was gorgeous. I'd pay some extra money for that.
Yeah, I'm gonna look into that because I wonder if anyone's doing those mockups. It'd be kind of fun to see the MacBook like that as well, wouldn't it? And
oh, for sure.
Some of the other new machines.
Yeah, I would like that a lot. So let's talk about the bite from the Apple. There's so much lore that goes into that. I mean, I once heard that Steve Jobs wanted to make Apple products seem forbidden, and so it's supposed to be like a forbidden piece of fruit, like from the Garden of Eden, right? Have you guys heard any stories like that, Leander? Have you heard anything else?
No, I actually interviewed Rob Janoff years ago for Wired.
Yeah,
and he told me all about it, and I can't remember what I wrote.
Well,
I'll see if I can look it up.
This might be what he actually said. So, according to Rob Janoff, the guy who actually helped design that logo, he said the bite on the Apple logo was really to let people know that it was an apple and not a cherry. If you look at the logo, if you take away that bite, it totally just looks like a cherry. The bite also played along with the computer buffs at that time because it sounded similar. It had a similar sound off to the word byte, B-Y-T-E, a unit of digital information in computing and telecommunication. So all these like legends and lore that were supposed to make it seem like provocative and seductive and forbidden, it turns out it was just put in there so that people knew it was an apple and not a cherry. So very practical, very pragmatic, and of course the play on bytes would please the nerds at the time. So still a cool story, but not nearly as cool as the lore and legends, which is often the case, isn't it? All right, let's move on. The last segment, an all new what we're into. This is the stuff that we generally can't work into the show because it doesn't have to do with technology. It might be a movie, it might be television, something that we currently are digging. And actually, I'm going to pick two things this week. I saw something on YouTube yesterday that really slicked my hair back, and I want to tell you guys about that. But since I got two, let me go first, and then if you guys have one, I can go first, and I can
We have enough time to squeeze ours in. Maybe just do two, and then we'll wrap it up.
You know what? That's a good point. So we'll get you guys next time, okay? In fact, you guys can just go. I'll wrap up the show. Actually, Leander, you wanted to do a Watch Store promo, right?
Oh, yeah.
Let's do that real fast. Okay, so as I'm looking this up, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Cultamac Watch Store.
The amazing Cultamac Watch Store. It's the one-stop emporium for everything, all your Apple Watch needs. We've got an amazing selection of bands, chargers, stands, you know, all the accessories you could possibly want. It's, I think, the best, probably the only place to go for the widest selection of quality, good quality Apple Watch accessories. Like, there's nowhere else, as far as I know, on the web where you can see a whole range of products from a whole range of different third-party accessory providers. You know, like Amazon, of course, is the exception, but on Amazon, it's flooded with junk. You know, a lot of the stuff you get on there is cheap rubbish. It'll give you a rash. It'll fall to pieces.
It'll turn your skin green.
Right. All the stuff we're selling is we've reviewed, we've looked at, we've vetted, and we
it's approve. It's curated.
It's curated.
It's curated by people with taste.
Yeah. I don't like that term, but it is. It's true.
Why?
It's,
I think that's a great term. It's perfect. That's exactly what it is.
It conjures up, you know, this kind of, you know, certain associations. But anyway, let's move beyond that. And we've added some really nice stuff recently. We've got these really nice elastic bands. I don't know what you call it, but you know, it's a silver steel band.
They're like stretchy metal
stretchy
bands,
ones,
right?
Yeah. And yeah, I've just been testing this one out for like a week. It's really, really good. And it's relatively inexpensive. And it's just like my granddad. My granddad used to have one like this, and I really
right,
like
it's
it.
Like those vintage watch bands, vintage metal watch bands.
Yeah,
that it's totally exactly what it's like.
Yeah, it's a 70s one. It's by a company called Speedel, and
it's Speedel.
I think they're here from here in the US, but it's a super nice band. It's a really nice band. We just added it to the watch store, and here's the most important part. We've created a special discount code just for Cultcast listeners.
Oh, there you go. This is what the people needed.
20% off store-wide.
20%?
20% off everything. That's a crazy, incredible deal. We're going to go
bankrupt. And our listeners are the only people that get this.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
You're not blowing smoke here.
Oh,
yeah.
It's not to riffraff. It's only for Cultcast listeners. The code is Cultcast. So at checkout, write Cultcast into the discount code box. You know, hit return, and you'll get an instant 20% discount off of anything and everything you buy, which really is suicide for us. But so take advantage of it now while you have the chance before we go out of business, and get one of these elastic bands from Speedel. They're super super nice.
Hey,
as is a whole bunch of other stuff.
Can you create a new code called Cultcast Host, which is like 90% off? maybe just send that my way. we don't have to announce it on the show, you know. Just like,
yeah, I don't think we'll be doing that. But
come on, we can talk about it later.
We'll talk about it later. Yeah.
Code Cultcast, and the URL is store.cultofmac.com.
Yeah.
store.cultofmac.com. The code is Cultcast, easy to remember. And 20% off, which is a pretty large discount.
That's a big, huge discount, yeah.
Absolutely. You're going to make Leander go poor, Leander's giving these away. He's taking a loss when you use the discount code.
Exactly.
Every time you use it, he cries and
I know.
Crasps his hands together and shakes them at the sky. Okay, store.cultamac.com. Let's move on to what we're into. So the first thing that I want to pimp, one of the things that I was blown away by is this Blade Runner 2049 short film just came out yesterday.
Yeah.
I love that people are doing this now. You know, like normally people just release trailers, and I don't like to watch trailers because they reveal what's going to happen in the movie itself. But this is kind of cool because it doesn't show you what's happening in the actual film. It's before the film takes place, but it still gives you the mood and the feeling of what the film is going to be like and who the characters are. It's very strange and eerie. And one of the things I love about Blade Runner, which, by the way, I only watched for the first time, I think like 3 weeks ago.
What?
I'd never seen it before.
What?
It was on my list forever, and I finally watched it.
Really?
I was blown away.
What did
I was
you
blown
think of
away.
It?
I probably watched it 3 times.
Yeah. It's an astonishing film.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, the story is a little bit choppy. There's some parts in it where I don't really understand what's going on, or they just didn't land with me. But it is a absolutely amazing, magnificent vision, sci-fi vision of the future. It's so well thought out. The lighting is incredible. All of the props are cinematic and futuristic, and I think I fell in love with the world that Ridley Scott
built more than anything else. I think the story is the strongest part.
Well, Ridley Scott didn't make it, by the way, the story. It was
I thought he directed it.
It was a novel by Philip K. Dick originally called Android's Dream of Sleep, I believe.
Well,
but yeah,
I
it was converted
like
from a novel.
Yeah, but the novel is nothing like the movie.
It's similar. I've read both. I took a film class where it was like all about novels converted into movies. And I mean, it wasn't exactly the same, but I mean, a lot of the concepts are the same.
So it pulls loosely from the book, but cinematically it's very different, isn't it?
Well, yeah. He doesn't describe it well, you know, like this sort of cyberpunk vision of Ridley Scott.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think the thing that I was most excited for in this little short is just the way they light everything. The lighting is masterful in these movies. They create these beautiful portraits just with lighting, and it really brings a beautiful life to the scenes. And I was happy to see that they were doing that in Blade Runner 2049 as well, which comes out in October. And so now I'm super excited to see this movie. Whereas before I was kind of like, I'm probably going to see this, but I saw the trailer before I actually watched Blade Runner, and now that I've seen Blade Runner, I'm much more excited for the movie itself. We could actually do a whole segment just on Blade Runner. Because we could talk about the story, right? I think the story is also very fascinating. But I don't think we have time to do that right now. Maybe we should do that at a later date. Maybe when the movie's going to come out, we could talk about the story itself.
So but, you didn't mention there's going to be three of these shorts, right, that are going to be coming out. Oh, so there's two more to come.
Yes. So I just watched the first one. I'll link to it in the show notes. If you haven't seen it, did you watch it, Leander?
I did. And you know, I only kind of half agree with what you were saying. Okay.
Did you understand what was going on? Because I had a hard time actually understanding what
in the short?
This short was trying to convey. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was like you know, some of the background information about, because they've had this whole elaborate timeline, and I think it came out, I actually read a post about it before I watched it, so I think I understood a little bit more about what it was trying to do. They're saying that they at Comic-Con they released this elaborate timeline that tells you what's happened in the 30 years since the end of the original Blade Runner, and then, you know, what's supposed to be going on in Blade Runner 2049, because the original Blade Runner was set in, what, 2019, I think?
I think it was 2019.
So there's supposed to be a 20 or 30 year difference between the two. And then in between, there was like a major sort of EMT event, like a thermonuclear event.
Yeah, they called it the blackout.
Right. So, and then there's like a dust bowl, and then the society has devolved even further. It's even more desperate than it was in the original Blade Runner. Or rather, it's you know, it's a sort of post-apocalyptic society now, right? That I think where, you know, people are, there's... It would have been there would have been mass starvation, but the main character played by Jared Leto, he's an agricultural biochemist who's actually managed to save the world's food supply, and now he's been moving into replicants. So he's building artificial.
And that technology
people.
is like illegal now.
Yeah, it's been made illegal. Right, exactly. So I don't know if that was clear from that short, the trailer short that you watched.
It kind of was. I could tell that he had done something to help the world with their food because they kind of mention it, but they don't really go into any kind of detail. Yeah. So there's just a lot of murky plot in there that I couldn't really decipher.
Yeah, yeah. They don't say who he is or what he's been doing. And anyway, I kind of knew. I read this post that kind of explained it. So it was you know, like clearer to me anyway. What I think, you know, what was supposed to be going on. And so, I actually, you know, for that point, and maybe I shouldn't have watched it because it didn't, it made the end of the, and I don't want any spoilers here, but it made what happened at the end of the short less shocking and less surprising. And I thought it was kind of ugly and I didn't really like it.
The short?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was somewhat disturbing.
Yeah, it was. It was totally disturbing. And I thought ugly and I didn't like it at all. So.
But I think that was supposed to be the point. It was supposed to disturb you.
Well, I guess.
Okay. Anyway, okay, so I'll link to it in the show notes if you want to check it out. The full movie comes out in October, so I'm sure we'll be talking more about this. Leander, are you going to talk about Game of Thrones? Okay, we can't have spoilers. You freaking dudes, let me tell you guys. You guys, hey. I get a lot of spoilers online, and then I get spoilers from you guys. Leander, of course, spoiled one of the biggest twists in the entire Game of Thrones franchise after we had a 5-minute discussion on how I hated spoilers, and he's like, yeah, I hate spoilers too, and I can't believe they killed XYZ in Game of Thrones, right. And then this happened. And I was like, what? And then silence, and then Leander realized he just spoiled one of the biggest parts of the entire series,
I know,
and he starts dying laughing.
I do apologize. And I apologize to all the readers as well. I'd listen to
I didn't include it in the show, so they don't.
Oh, really? You didn't?
Yeah, I included what the conversation.
Oh,
I bleeped out what you said.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna.
You bleeped out the spoiler?
Of course I bleeped it out. What am I gonna go and then spoil it for everyone after you spoil it?
Well, come on. It's like 3 seasons ago now. I mean, it was
and
like.
And some people were emailing me and were like, what happened? Like, what did he say? And I was like, I'll never tell.
Jeez.
I'll never tell you. Yeah. Okay, so.
Well, Leander, I wanted to rant about Game of Thrones because I wanted to get off my chest, like, how much I hate the show now. It's gone from being my favorite show to my least favorite show.
Just like that, overnight.
Over the period of this season. And one of the reasons maybe is because I've actually had to watch it. I binge watched it because I was away in Thailand for 3 weeks. So, and I had already missed a couple of episodes before that. So when I got back, I caught up. Me and the kids sat there and watched, you know, like most of this latest season, all in one go. And because of that, I think, you know, like I think you tend to see more of the flaws. But you also get a sort of tend to see, you know, this season, it's been very much plot driven. You know, you can tell that they're sort of moving these chess pieces around. and it's just made it ridiculous. It's totally jumped the shark. In fact, the shark's jumping all over the place. I mean, it's like a f-ing shark show, like at Marine World. There's sharks jumping out of the water everywhere. Uh-huh. And it used to be like, what was great, I think, about it was that it was actually really a political show. It was about politics, and it was driven by characters. And it was really Machiavellian, you know. It was like about medieval politics, and it was really brutal, and surprising, and you know, unsentimental, and you know, it realistic. You know, for a show with dragons and White Walkers, you know, all these kind of fantasy elements. What was made it great was that it was really, really realistic. I think like some of the best portrayals of like medieval kings I've ever seen, you know, Robert Baratheon, the character Robert Baratheon.
Oh, he's, wine!
Right. He's by far the most convincing medieval king I've ever seen on TV.
Yeah, that's true.
It was a brilliant portrayal, brilliant in its sophistication, you know, like it's not clowning around. And then this season, I feel like it's all about dragons and White Walkers and all these fantasy elements that were in the background previously are now in the foreground, and now it's become about that, and it's ridiculous. It's lost all of its sophistication, and it's about plot. You know, it's like, okay, this character's going to do this, this character's going to do that. There was a major death, you know, in this.
No spoilers.
Okay, a major death of one of the best characters in the entire season, and he was dispatched in 30 seconds or a minute. And I was like, what?
You didn't like it?
How could they do that?
It was just like done and over?
Yeah, well, and he's gone. Yeah. And it's like, how could they do that to one of the best characters in the whole series? I thought it was awful. I thought it was just, you know, like, it was terrible. It was a really bad disservice. I'm really pissed off about it.
There was a show called, it was about vampires. It was called True Blood. I think I've talked about this before. And the first season was very mysterious. And there were all these, like subplots of vampires, and then it turns out, like, I think in season 2 or season 3, everyone has like these strange powers, and like all of a sudden they took something that was very special, being a vampire, and kind of dumbed it down because it turns out everyone had superpowers in some way, and it kind of ruined the entire show. And it sounds like the same thing might be happening in Game of Thrones. Like, it's just getting to be like where everything is ridiculous.
I've seen a lot of like complaints about this season, like the pacing is all way too fast or rushed, and there's not enough time for, like, if it was a 10 episode season, it would have been better, I feel like.
How many episodes is it?
7 this year, and then I think it's 6. Oh, really?
7, season? Yeah.
So maybe they are just trying to jam a lot in.
Yeah, it's a shame. And I think, you know, did you also see, I also saw these complaints too, Buster, that people were saying that, you know, the problem is that it's not based on George R.R. Martin's books any longer.
True.
You know, they're now in this uncharted territory, so.
Yeah.
I think that maybe has a lot to do with it, you know? Have you read the books?
Yeah, I read the books. So that's why I've been stoked about this season, because I read, what was the last one? I can't remember what the last, but we've been waiting for Winds of Winter for like 6 years now. That's like supposed to be the second to last book. And so now,
the second to last?
Yeah, and then there's going to be another one after that. Supposedly, if he doesn't die, but it's probably not going to happen. And so that's what's like the show. It's like, oh, okay, like all the stuff that you've been waiting 20 years for, if you've read the books, is like, oh, you know, it's kind of like all happening so fast that it just, like, you know, the books, everything's going to be like way more slower and thought out. And, you know, there's also like people that have died in the books that are alive in the show and vice versa. So.
Interesting.
Yeah, how faithful was it to the books anyway? Because I haven't read the books, and people are saying that it took a lot of, it did diverge from the books.
Yeah, there is like a lot of stuff that's different. I mean, the books are definitely way better. They're just brutal. Like, the first season of Game of Thrones when dies, and the Red Wedding, and
I'll go ahead and bleep
3.
That out. No,
no
come
problem.
On.
It's like season, if you're not, jeez. If you haven't watched season 1 by now, like, ugh. Like, I mean, that's,
yeah,
like the,
right. Yeah, we have different metrics on spoilers.
It's like we can't talk about Blade Runner because it's 25 years old and somebody might not have watched it yet. But
fun.
That's actually a good point. We probably shouldn't have talked about it.
But anyway, yeah. The books are way...
Sorry, go ahead.
But they're, you know, it's like frustrating to read them too at times because George R. R. Martin, sometimes he'll stay with characters who you're like, why do we even care about this guy? Like, I want to go back to, you know, the main people, Tyrion and, you know, and all that stuff. And there's tons of characters in the books that aren't in the show at all. So the show kind of was way faster the way it developed than his books, which I think was good in some cases too, though.
It was all about characters. And my favorite parts of the show, and everyone talks about, you know, the shocking deaths, the shocking massacres, you know, the shocking this, the shocking that. But for me, the pleasures in the show were things like, I thought like the romance between Jon Snow and the...
Whoa.
I don't think I'm going to spoil anything here. Uh-huh. One of the romances that Jon Snow had in one of the previous, like 3 seasons ago or whatever, I thought was some of the best... I was really I thought it was like the best love story I'd seen on TV or in a movie for a long, long time. And was very, very touching. And I think the character, you know, the Hound, you know, his interactions, his weird sort
he's
of
a great character, isn't
yeah, father daughter relationship with Arya Stark, you know, their interactions were, I thought, really great, you know, really, really great. And he was such a great, great character, I thought, really brilliantly brought to life. And those are the moments when, if I go back and rewatch it, that's what I'm going to, you know, enjoy seeing again. You know, not the brutal stuff, not the parts where people get, you know, horribly murdered.
I know that's the hard stuff, isn't it? I like that stuff is in there because it kind of jolts you and it makes you appreciate the stuff that's softer in the show, but it's hard to watch.
Yeah.
That stuff is so brutal. It's just kind of hard to make it through.
What's great is the way they kind of, all of the characters were really vivid and I think really, and really sophisticated. You know, they weren't, you know, for Ned Stark, his, you know, his kids, Arya Stark, Sansa Stark, her journey has been really interesting. You know, the characters like Littlefinger, Cersei, you know, like they're all really brilliantly drawn characters, really vivid, really sophisticated, you know, human beings with their own, with all these complex motivations. And the story that he wove from these characters' interactions was convincing, I think, and really, really, you know, you could really get lost in it. And it's become this, like, now it's become, you know, they're just moving these, you know, it's not driven by that any longer. They're doing all these, like, I just found it really unconvincing, you know, like, various characters' motivations, the things they did was like, that's just not believable. That's not believable for the character, you know. I don't believe that they would do that. I'm not convinced at all. You know, like the stuff that Tyrion's been doing this season. I'm going to say what he's been doing, but, you know, Tyrion went from this very, very fascinating character. And he's the main, you know, one of the main characters in this latest season, but driving a lot of the plot. But then his motivations, the way he prevents things, I just find it completely unconvincing. I'm just like, this just isn't, I don't believe it. It's just ridiculous. You know, it's like, you can see, you know, you can see the script writing coming through. You can see the writers, you know, trying to move stuff along and make things happen. And it's really unconvincing. You know, the way it's been conjured up is just, I don't know, you know, like it's
well, like
lost
you said,
its magic.
I mean, the books, they're ahead of the books now. And so they're responsible for driving the plot forward. And maybe they're just doing it in a way that's different than George R. R. Martin would do it. So, and they're used to having to write screenplays and not, long books.
I would have said their skills are second to none. You know, I would have said, like, I think they've done an amazing, amazing job. You know, and I think, you know, they've you know, I wouldn't like I said, you know, like Buster said earlier as well, they've diverged from the books quite a lot, so they've done a great, you know, I wouldn't have said it's, I don't know, it's difficult to say, isn't it? Is it because the source material isn't there or what's going on? It's hard to unpack.
But I know
it's,
they've,
it's kind
also
of a bit unfathomable.
They've talked to George R. R. Martin about where he envisions it heading and everything. So I do, like, and he's an executive producer on the show, so he does have input on it.
Well, if you want to see some believable acting, you can see the Hound's character in the movie Hot Fuzz, where he plays the village idiot.
Oh, really?
Do you remember that?
No.
Did you see that movie?
I've seen the movie, but I don't remember him.
Yeah. You won't even know that it's him until I tell you that it's him. And then when you see it, he's this big, tall... bald guy. It's marvelous.
Huh, okay.
Very incredible character building that he does in that movie.
Okay, cool.
Powerful scenes.
Yeah.
Okay, so Buster, what do you got for us?
Are we doing what we're into or under review?
We're doing what we're into. That's why we're talking about
under
things
review
that aren't
at the beginning. Oh.
No. You got something good? You want me just to pitch us some rap?
Yeah, why don't you tell us about the snake show?
No, the snake show is cool. I guess I'm really into like riding motorbikes out here, so that's cool. Like,
you got a moped that
you're Yeah, dude, I run a scooter out here, and I've just been driving it like everywhere for like 3 weeks, which I thought was going to be totally crazy. Leander can attest. Like, traffic here is like next level ridiculous. Like, I thought I was going to die.
There's just no rules,
no,
right?
No rules. Yeah, the lane lines are just suggestions. You know, people just park randomly on the side of the street or stop or like turn into the lane. Like, just like, oh, sorry, you got to avoid me, bitch. Like, it's just like...
It's just every man for himself.
Yeah, it is crazy. But I've like kind of like really learned to dig it. It's like you got to go with the flow and like feel it, you know? And but yeah, I don't know. It's like,
circular. Circular. Yeah. All right, so you're into riding scooters.
Scooters, I guess.
And yeah, but you're also riding them in the dead of night when no one's actually awake.
No, so I'm not riding them at night. I try not to ride at night.
Oh,
Why
not?
Because I don't want a car to hit me. I just feel like that's more likely to get an accident. Plus, you can't see potholes or loose gravel on the road, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. How are the roads over there?
Pretty good. Like, most of the roads are actually really good. There. Surprising. So, yeah.
So the infrastructure is better than Phoenix
again.
Yeah,
it is.
All right. Well, let me wrap us up here with what was going to be my true pick. Before I diverted temporarily. So, have you guys ever heard of Childish Gambino?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so Childish Gambino is the music name of the actor Donald Glover. He was in...
Atlanta.
Community. Yeah. And I saw people talking about his albums on Reddit, and people were always saying how great he was and, you know, so on and so forth. And I just thought it was... just fanboys, right? People who liked Community, and because they liked Community, they're like, oh, Donald Glover's, he's a great musician, right? Because Community is so good that he's also a good musician. Because actors are never good musicians. Every actor who's ever come out with an album has come out with Will Smith, Eddie Murphy came out with an album, right? Which is a parody of itself. Did William Shatner come out
with
an album?
He's on a bunch of albums, yeah.
I'm sure that's actually probably incredible. How dare you talk about William Shatner that way. But, who else can I think of? Mila Jovovich, that girl who was in The Fifth Element. She's also a model. These albums tend to not be great musical works. So I ran across this song on Spotify.
Which one?
In a random playlist. And I was like, dude, this is a great song. And I looked down. And it was Childish Gambino. And I couldn't believe it.
What was the
song? I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And then I went to the entire album, which is called Awaken My Love. Oh, okay. It came out in 2016.
Yeah.
And I listened to the entire thing, start to finish. And it's like this very soulful mixture of like R&B and electronic music and beats and future sounds and jazz. And it's like a whole fusion of all these great things put together in a very sophisticated way. And I've been loving this album. I've been listening to it over and over and over and over again. This is Childish Gambino. I am going to eat my hat. I cannot believe that this is Donald Glover. It's that good. Huh. And I just... He probably listens to the show. So, Donald, I want to apologize to you for ever doubting you. I mean, truly, this should have been a bad album. These albums should not have been good because you're a good actor, and good actors shouldn't be able to make music like this. And maybe his other albums aren't good, but this one, Awaken My Love, it's on Spotify if you want to check it out. I thought was very good.
Did
and
you
I've been listening to it,
listen to
it
any of his other of albums?
No, I haven't made it past this one.
I mean, that one's
good?
Totally different than all of his other stuff because it's like very soulful. And like his other albums, I actually like his other albums better because they're just hype rap music. And he's actually really good with lyrics. Like Bonfire is great. Like, I mean, he's got a ton of super good rap songs. But
dude,
yeah,
who would have guessed?
Amazing. Like, so talented.
He's really good.
And his TV show is awesome too. Like that he wrote with his friends. What was the name of that? I can't remember.
What show was that?
1 second. I'll
okay, now you're gonna leave us hanging. We'll have to look it up. Okay, so we'll include links to all this stuff in the show notes if you want to check it out. If you want to get hyped, go listen to "Awaken My Love" by my favorite artist, a guy I've loved for a long time, Childish Gambino. He's the real deal. Let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. If you want to come say g'day, Gov, or talk about any of the stories that we mentioned in today's episode, we are on Twitter. I'm at AirFunBusters, BST3R. Leander is L. Caney. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. Hodor. Hodor. Hodor.
He's a c-. Better cut that out.
Hodor. Nice. Hey, Buster, I was just thinking, what would it take for you to leave the Churro Squad and join my new group, the Loincloth Crew?
Oh, I don't know, man. I don't think you can really send it, so you got to up your skill level first, I guess.
Hold on now. I've never actually sent it before.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure I can do it. It doesn't look that hard.
Okay.
Can we start with like some like small sends though, like maybe like 6-7 feet max?
Yeah, yeah, some 2-footers for you. Get warmed up.
You got some 2-footer, some 2-foot waterfalls, yeah. I can jump off. Maybe we'll wait till it rains and I'll jump from the curb into a puddle in the street. Does that count as the first jump?
I think so.
But our angle will be we only do it in loincloths, right? So like we're hiking up the mountain, we bust out our loincloths, and it's like we look totally just normal when we're standing there, but as soon as you jump, the wind hits the loincloth, poof.
Oh, full blow.
And you're just going full butt cheeks all the way down.
I have a friend that actually does jump in a loincloth sometimes. His name's Crazy Clark. He's a flat earth theorist, but he's like a professional high diver who jumps
what?
In.
What? Yeah. He's what?
He's a flat earther?
He's one of the weirdest people I've ever met. Like, phenomenal, like, diver, like, does, like, 130-foot double gainers, no problem. Totally crazy, though. Like, believes the earth is flat and, like, rocks give you power and
it's
stuff
funny.
Like that.
Well, I mean, rocks do give you power, so that one's not that crazy. But the whole flat earth thing, that's making a comeback. I've heard other people talk about that before, too, and now there are people out there that say, like, the earth actually is flat and no one can prove that it's round.
Oh, gosh, that's all right, so yeah, stupid.
Okay. I mean, to their points, you really can't prove the earth is round.
Yes, you can. Really, you know? Just send a GoPro up with a balloon and look at the picture. Like, people do it.
Yeah, right.
Well, but you can only see the horizon.
They proved it 3,000 years ago or more, 4,000 years ago. You know, like, they even measured, the Greeks measured the circumference of the earth, you know, based on shadows of the sun.
Did they?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's all fake.
They've known it for a long time.
That's fake. That's fake news, Leander.
This is a fascinating debate. Perhaps we can bring this up again next week, but I better go because this guy's going to get a minute.